sit back and get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf.
Jim Ackley can move wherever you want. We're in the shade now because it's not Florida hot, but it's still pretty hot up here.
What's the temperature up there right now currently?
About 85-ish, 82 something. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Wow, that's compared to the last podcast. I think it was kind of almost some snow and stuff like out there. So that's kind of crazy.
So you can hear us okay?
Yes, sir. Certainly can. Coming in loud and clear.
Great, man.
All right.
I'll let you start. Go
from there. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Dynamic Podcast. I'm your co-host, Tim McElvanna, and with me is my fellow co-host, Sean Klotz. And today, Sean, please give us a great introduction for this gentleman. This is a great one today.
Dynamic Golf listeners, I'm really excited to have Coach Jerry York with us. Coach, just go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit, say who you are, and we'll fill in the rest. But I know you're a very humble guy, too.
Well, a long-time Oakley member, going on 28 years here, and as Sean has probably told you, Tim Mack, that, you know, this is Don Ross's very first golf course.
Yes.
It's kind of incredible to play, and even though it's a short course, we're probably playing at 6,000 yards here. He had a way to, with his green structures and putting surfaces, to make it hard to score on, so I'm one of those guys that I play it, I love it, but it's hard for me to score here.
T-Mac, it's 6,000 yards, but it's also par 70. I think that's the thing that people kind of take for granted. So this is definitely shorter par fours.
Mm-hmm.
But like Coach said, it's so much guarded by the greens and the structure. And the course really hasn't changed since you've been here.
No.
Is that right, structurally?
No, everybody is just done losses here.
Exactly. Still, 1899.
It still hasn't changed, probably from, just with a few different changes with land while was lost to houses. But we're probably the first course I can think of that is, one of those Jack Nicklaus signs with houses all around it, right?
So yeah.
We just put a course in the middle of houses. Right in the city,
right in the neighborhood. So,
well, I mean, that, you know, the old times, that's what they kind of did. They kind of used the land that they had. But I think the sheer genius of what's held up to the test of time now with him is that, he can make something that can last 100 years and we haven't changed it, which you see a lot of other courses getting revamped and rechanged.
So listeners, we need to not gloss over this fact of who we have in front of us. I know Coach York, yeah. I've only known him for a month. Probably one of the most humble people I've met so far. But Coach Jerry York, he became the winningest men's college ice hockey coach in history in 2012. Just got an illustrious career. Coached BC for 24 years, 28 years? 28 years.
Wow.
Coached hockey for 50 years, by the way. That shouldn't be glossed over.
Mm-hmm.
Five time, as our mower goes by, T-Mac.
Yeah. That's what's the good thing about this show. We're live.
Yeah, this is what we like, though, right, T-Mac? We like the ambiance. Yes.
Absolutely. We're here. We're on the outdoors having fun, man.
Yeah. So he's a five-time NCAA college coach champion. They won the championship four times with BC, one time with Bowling Green. Am I doing it right so far, Coach?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good. I mean, 12 Frozen Fours, which is the NCAA, that's the Frozen Four for basketball, basically.
Yeah, the Final Four, yeah.
He went to the NCAA tournament 18 times. I mean, I can keep going. The Beanpot, Tim McElvanna, and for Florida listeners who don't appreciate the bean pot.
Mm-hmm.
It's really one of the best college tournaments around, and it's just the four teams still, Coach. Isn't that right?
Yes, yeah.
So Harvard, BC, BU.
And Northeastern.
And Northeastern. Right. And up here, T-Mac, that would be like University of Florida playing FSU or Alabama playing Auburn type of thing. That's how distinguished that career, that tournament is.
Wow. And all four schools are within 8 miles of each other. It's crazy how close we are.
So a lot of rivalry there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He's only got 9 titles in that little deal there. But yeah. Anyways, he wouldn't have agreed if we just talked about hockey. He wants to talk about golf.
Let's talk about golf.
You know, I've coached 50 years. So I've played a lot of fundraisers, a lot of events surrounding the schools at BC and at Clarkson up in northern New York and Bowling Green and the northwest of Ohio, which are surrounded by great golf courses. So I've had a chance to play some. But I need Sean here to help me get my handicap down. I'm watching his YouTubes, and he's got me doing all kinds of things. Skipping with the one leg up in the air. And so hopefully I'm getting better.
Trying.
Well, he's a great coach. I've seen him change some people's swing around quite a bit, and definitely take a putting lesson from him. The guy knows a thing about the green for sure. So
Coach York, T-Mac, we were just talking literally 5 minutes before the podcast. I was trying to tell him a story about how I had an instructor that I went to see down in Port St. Lucie. His name was Rick Martino.
Mm-hmm.
He was a director of instruction for the PGA. He worked at Oakmont.
Oh.
And Coach says, oh, no, hold on. I got to tell you the story about when I played Oakmont. He's got – Coach, just give us a little itinerary of where you've been able to play.
Let's hear it.
I fought part of the first green there, despite, you know, the member telling me how quick it's going to be. And then I got that church pews, and I think I hit each one of those church pews. So yeah, it was a humbling day at Oakmont, but a fun day.
What are the if you had a chance to play?
Well, I think if I had to rate them, you know, I think Pine Valley and Shinnecock are probably my two favorites. I really like the San Francisco Golf Club. I went out with a group of alumni for an event there, and you know, I always ask, I want to play Olympic, and the guys go, this is the one you want to play. It was fabulous. There was one hole there where there's a duel. They had a note about the two congressmen in a duel, one shot each other. It was like, oh, wow. That's very cool.
That's cool.
But it's some fun. And, you know, it's just, I don't care what course you play. It's just, you get 3 good guys with you, or, you know, ladies with you, whatever. You can have a lot of laughs. It doesn't have to be, you know, national or Inverness or 17.
Yeah. Places. It's the company you keep that makes it enjoyable, right?
Yeah, it's just
such a great game, T-Mac. We talk about all the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, the people that we would dream to play with, and half the time it's either our family or a friend or something like that, and nobody really cares about the course. We'd go play the local course around the corner or the local muni. As long as we've got a good group, we're happy to go, right?
And T-Mac, it's one of those situations where, you know, you hit a good shot. So, oh, God, I've got this game now. You know, that leaves you. So you're always trying to improve and do different things. That's the fun of it. That's like life. I mean, coaching, you always want to be better as a coach. And, you know, as a father, you want to be better at raising kids. So every day you go through challenges. It's a fun way to go through the summers, not the winter season, like you guys could do.
So, Coach, speaking about kids, I've got a little question for you. Being an instructor myself and all that, when you see these kids, you know, being a coach at a high level like yourself, what are some of the attributes or what are some of the things that you kind of look forward to? I mean, what are some of the great attributes that you kind of recognize that athlete's going to make it or not?
You know, I think the perseverance, just to keep going at it, you know, given a certain level of talent. But I've seen so many careers, you know, just end when just a little more grit from the player, you know, knocking down doors and just trying to get better every single day. The competitiveness inside you. Because we've seen a lot of players from our colleges to the NHL that make a great, great living. But a lot should have been there that didn't get there just because they ran into some obstacles. Because, you know, T-Mac, you become the best golfer at Oakley, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you go to some other spot. Whoa, where are these guys learning to play?
Yeah.
So, and then you got to fight through it and become the best you can.
Gotcha.
That's a great one, T-Mac. You know, we've talked about that sometimes in our podcasts about from the lesson perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
We give the gentleman, lady, whoever, child, junior, a lesson. And that instantaneous, and it's become a little more the last, we'll call it 10 years, with sort of the advent of the iPhone, social media, some of those things. But that instantaneous gratification type of thing, that's not how, you use a couple of Boston guys, Ray Bourque became Ray Bourque,
mm-hmm.
or Jerry Cheevers became Jerry Cheevers, or, you know, Cam Neely. Like, those are all Boston references. Some of the people won't get that.
Yeah. But
it's not how Lemieux got it. It's not how Gretzky got it. Gretzky was the fastest, biggest guy, but he understood the game and he kept working at it every single day. And I think that's from the golf side, you know, bring it back to what we're talking about as far as why people listen to us. And why Coach York asks me every day, he'll text me 8 o'clock at night. Hey, I watched this YouTube video. Yeah. What do you think going on with this? Right. It's great. It's like that constant, never ending, trying to get better at the game.
Yeah.
That's why we get up in the morning and do it.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, will you please teach him how to respond to a text? I'm still waiting for some of those, you know, downhill sliders set up. Golf, as fun as it could be so frustrating. You see some of the people walk off the course that, you know, they had 4 hours of the sun with good guys and they missed a three-footer or you know, thinned a sandwich.
Yeah.
They're all up in that. I mean, God, it's a game, you know, for us. It's not, we're not making a living out of it.
Absolutely. You're out there to have fun, camaraderie, and you know, just getting out and enjoying the day. I mean, I see so many people get uptight about swings, and I'm like, you're not good enough to get that mad.
Yeah, they don't put the effort in. So to touch on something we have to touch on, T-Mac, because we haven't done a podcast in a week.
Yeah.
Scotty was, you know, last Friday at the PGA Championship.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want to talk about the case or the police or anything like that. But the fact that he showed up 3.5 hours for his tee time early, right? So I think, right. Coach York, you can give us some insight on your players don't show up on the ice. That amount of exercise, weight room, stretching, watching video, I imagine, probably came up throughout your years as a coach, like change. Just give us some insight on that.
Yeah.
I mean, the background of those type of golfers, how serious they take the event, remarkable. And it carries over to, you know, Kobe Bryant in basketball.
Yeah, listen
to how he prepared for games and, you know, Brad Marchand, one of the Bruins here that was just lost, but he'd be the same way. He's there so early for games, and it was remarkable to watch some of the baseball players at 8 o'clock game, and they get into the park at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the latest, right? Just the worker, like Scott said, stretching. And we've got guys running from our golf, from our car up the steps, grab a club and score the first tee. And
right.
Why not get it very well?
Right.
No.
But
like you say, T-Mac, the expectation level's got to change with the player. And I don't want to come off negative. It's just be realistic with your, like Coach just said, like you say, T-Mac, be realistic with your expectations. You know, understand, hey, we're just going to go out there and have a good time. Let's do that. It can be a social event. But you can't be throwing clubs or getting mad at yourself based on how much you put into the game.
Well, I mean, if you want to get to the next level, you've got to put in, you know, you've got to be there 3 or 4 hours ahead of time. That's why Scottie Scheffler's number one in the world. You know, you've got to put that time in, that effort in to, you know, do that. And I see, you know, I've got a couple students that are really good, you know, probably Division I students. And they could put a lot more work into it, you know, be more apt about their practice, their nutrition, their sleep. But, you know, as Coach said, you know, they get to a little bit tougher area and they just kind of, you know, kind of shy away from it, to be honest with you.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I don't let that tournament go without, you know, that last hole there with DeChambeau, last roll of the ball going in, and we're thinking of a playoff, and now all of a sudden the 3 foot to win, you know, mm-hmm. 10 minutes later. And I did watch Scott's putting lesson last night on YouTube, and he talked about a 3-foot putt. He says, now listen, even the pros only sink an average 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a guy who could win a first major, and he's got a 3-foot putt, and he just drains it. Well, we actually went around the cup.
Yeah, that was a good capture by the cup, to be honest with you. That was the cup kind of got up there and snagged that ball for him a little bit. But good for Xander Schauffele, a gracious winner, and I'm glad to see him win his first major for sure.
Hey, Mac, let me divert something. So do you have a specific pre-shot routine that you do every time?
Yeah, I do. I kind of, to be honest with you, I waggle the club quite a bit until I get ready. Yeah. Kind of like a Nick Price, to be honest with you. I get kind of teased about it a little bit, but people like it. So it is what it is. Yep. That's kind of my pre-shot routine.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Mine is between 16.9 and 17.1 seconds. That's my pre-shot routine. Steph Curry, you give him a basketball to do a free throw. You tell him to bounce it twice, he's going to miss. He only bounces it once, right?
Yeah.
So my question to coach is, hockey's such an active sport type of thing.
Yeah.
Not necessarily pre-shot routine, but when they're on the bench getting ready to go back on the ice, mm-hmm. like, do they do the same thing when they come off? Are they just trying to get rest? Are they looking at video? What are they kind of, how are they getting them prepared to get back on the ice? And as a coach, how are you doing that too, or assistant coaches?
Well, I think that the player is, resting, he comes back, he's got to catch his breath and really concentrate on his breathing for 15, 20 seconds and then start thinking about the next shift. Okay. Because if he sat thinking about that missed putt on 17, he'd be a wreck at the 18th tee. And, hockey's there's mistakes made. You know, you miss a check, you wide open net, you go over it. So when you get back, that shift's gone. And you've got to go on to your next snap. So that's really important, I think, in hockey. And I think that carries over to golf, too.
Yeah,
that's great advice right there for the crowd, right? So, right, T Mac.
Absolutely. You know, how many times do we miss that putt?
Who was the PGA golf? Was it McIlroy? They had the waggle or Garcia. Sergio forever to hit a golf ball.
Yeah. I've got kind of a little Sergio kind of thing. I kind of waggle the club, and I couldn't tell you for certain how many times I waggle that thing, but I try to keep myself active, and then once I kind of feel that shot in my head, boom, off I go.
That's a good point right there too, is you don't want to stay stiff and static. We gave a ladies clinic on Wednesday night, had about 30 ladies. Again, we talk about this all the time. If we presented a men's clinic, we might get two people, but the ladies are more like interested and active and want to, I wouldn't say want to get better, they're more open to it.
Yes.
But as we're teaching, you seem to do this, T-Mac. I'll go up there and hold the shaft of the club right below their hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much stress there is on that shaft.
Yes.
Right? Because they're nervous. They're in front of you. They're trying to do the right thing. They're so focused that they forget that it's an athletic move, like Coach just said. Like, you've got to be ready to make – it's that fusion of mental and physical together.
Yes.
Kind of where that line is. And golf is very difficult because it's static. Nothing's going to happen until you activate it, right?
Correct.
Right?
Correct. But you got to bring that inner athlete out somehow, that athlete of some sort. And I just find for myself, if I just stand over the ball, I'm not good.
No, it's the putting thing. It's the matter of not, again, the routine for putting is so important. Schauffele makes the putt because he doesn't deviate from the routine. He's made it. Millions of three-footers.
Yes.
That's mental.
But, Tim Mack, you and Sean got to talk about this because you talk about grip pressure and, Ben Hogan way back, hold the club like a bird. But all of us get up there and I can see the veins popping, You're thinking, I'm going to be soft, I am soft, but it's a hard thing to do in a, long par three over the water and your hands are like, what do you suggest for a sandwich of golf? Was like just how do we stop that?
You know what I kind of do when I get in pressure situations like that, where I start to feel the grip pressure, I actually squeeze the heck out of the club a couple times, and then once I grab that club after the second or third time, that tension's gone. You know, that's just what I kind of do. I know that it's there, so let's face the problem. So I just squeeze the club a couple times really hard. And then once I get that tension out, then it's just kind of, you know, feel those soft forearms and just let it roll. And don't worry about the results.
My answer to the question would be a little bit of the Tim Poltz lesson that we had a couple months ago when I was talking about grip pressure.
Yep.
And essentially, the thing is to keep the pressure consistent all the way through. Hang on. So one of the best examples would be Jack Nicklaus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nicklaus hovered the golf club because Jim Flick told him to hover the golf club.
Yeah.
The reason why he did it was so the consistent grip pressure stayed throughout the entire motion. He didn't ground the club, and then as soon as you lift the club off the ground, you're going to add pressure in your hands. So it's an easy thing to talk about, hard thing to do, especially like Coach said, out here, hole number 15 in Oakley is 100, depending on where you're playing, at 140, 160, over water, completely over water. There's no bailout. So you have to be committed to the shot, and you have to allow the club head to release and speed and all that type of stuff. As soon as you hold it tighter, it's going to stop. It's going to, you know, inhibit your speed, and you're apparently going to hit the ground and kind of hit a bad shot. So
I do have a few tightless booby ones in that pond. But, T-Mac, on the grip pressure, because people, yourself that listen to your show, it's, you know, you can hold it softly, but, boy, if it gets the ball sometimes, then you re-grip it. So I'm not to just stay consistent with your that re-grip just kind of.
So T-Mac, sorry, the continuation of the Tim Poltz lesson was when I get to a 5 and 6 iron, this is a good one for you, Coach, and for the listeners out there, hybrids, I would say, wedges, 9 irons, 8 irons, our swing speed is much slower than it is with a 5, 6 iron or hybrid.
Correct.
Right? That's established because the club is longer. So my problem is 5 and 6 irons keeping the ball flight straight. So Tim Poltz told me, grip the club tighter, but just keep it consistent all the way through, because we know the 5 and 6 iron is going to be swung faster, so the face is going to deflect more at that speed, right, T-Mac?
Correct. You're absolutely correct on that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so by gripping a club a little tighter, it's okay as long as it's consistently tight the entire time. And then I've hit some of my most straight 5 and 6 irons, long irons, because we get that question a lot from students. How do we hit our long irons better? It's okay to grip it tighter because you're going to keep the face more square through impact. And therefore, you know, the ball flight's going to be straighter.
Yep.
So what I'm saying is I don't have the same grip pressure on my 5 iron as I do for my lob 60-degree shot from 15 yards off the green.
Yeah.
There's no reason I should.
Yeah, and it just makes sense. I mean, with accelerated speed, you're going to have greater force to hold it. So, you know, if you just, you know, with probably, as you said, once about past the 6 iron, 5 iron and stuff like this, the grip pressure is going to gain a little bit on the Newtons on that for sure.
It's part of the reason Bryson went to the Jumbo Max grips, 100%. He wanted something he could hold and grab onto. He didn't want to have a thinner, smaller object, we'll call it. So by doing that, he can now put as much pressure he wants in his hands, but then really turn his shoulders. And that's where he gets his big part of his power.
Yeah. And to touch on Bryson, I think he's going to be a big favorite for the U.S. Open. I mean, he's been in contention for the last two majors. So I'm anxious to see that guy go hard at
Is he allowed to play in it? Are they putting him in?
U.S. Open's good.
He's a U.S. Open champ, isn't he? I think so. I'm not sure if his thing's up or not.
I think it's the same thing. I think the LIV, that's part of the reason the LIV guys are the LIV guys. They can still play in every major except for the Players Championship, because that's the PGA sanctioned one.
But they get all the majors. So
yeah. While we got Coach here, I got a question for him. You got me thinking. So Coach, the reason why Bryson is different than the player from 30 years ago, meaning like Corey Pavin or Tom Kite, the guys who hit it shorter, those guys couldn't compete now because you got Scheffler and Bryson and Rory just hitting these bomb drives. So what's the difference in hockey? The goalies have more padding, right? They're bigger, right? They're more dexterous or whatever. But the speed that I remember from Wayne Gretzky, Paul Coffey, like these guys back in the – it's gotten faster, right? They're bigger and faster as hard players.
No question. I was glued last night to the World Championships from Prague. The U.S. was playing Czechia in a 1-0 game, but it was like as fast as, I mean, these are the best players in the world coming from the NHL representing their countries. And, you know, Pasternak and Zakic from the Bruins. And we're players from BC, Matt Boldy. I think he's going to be the next American superstar in the NHL, a Modano or Brian Leach type of player. Mm-hmm. But he's just a big, strong center iceman that's in fabulous shape, as all these top-end players are. And they're just quicker, and they're just the better golfers, you know, the better hockey players.
Right. Right. Better baseball players.
Yeah.
Right? They're just getting bigger.
Bigger and stronger.
Yeah. Mac, I don't know how much you've seen this, but if you go watch some YouTube videos of Connor McDavid and some of his some of his hand drills, the kid from Chicago.
Bedard.
Like, it's amazing what they're doing with the puck in these pre-shot or pre-game drills. It's just, it's when Tiger makes the Nike commercial 20 years ago, where he's just sitting on the range, tapping the ball in the club and then hitting it. And the cameramen are like, what the heck did you do?
You know,
what these guys are doing is it's jaw dropping. And then you realize why their hands are so good in the game.
T-Mac, you're sitting right in the next Stanley Cup winner down there, the Panthers, Florida Panthers. One of my former players is assistant general manager, Brett Peterson.
Okay.
And you know, they got a great chance. You know, the Rangers are good. It's probably going to be a 7-game series. But, you know, like Tampa did a number of years ago, if Florida gets going now, wins the Stanley Cup, the state's going to be, you know, truly a football state. But,
you know, Coach, I've got to say that when hockey came down here, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, I didn't really think it had a snowball's chance. And you know what? But I'll tell you what, Tampa Bay really rallied to it. And hockey is huge down here. I mean, it's almost rivaling football almost, to be honest with you. It's amazing.
You got the most sellouts in the NHL right now, most consecutive sellouts. They're like 500, you know, 562 or something, the Lightning. Also because they deliver a great product. But yeah.
And it's a great location too, to be honest with you.
Location. Family. Coach would say this too, I would think. I don't know, but the sport in person is miles better than it is on TV. Right?
Yeah.
It's just the opposite of golf.
Yeah.
Because I go to the golf tournaments you need a periscope to look over and on TV golf is fascinating for me.
Just
the opposite of hockey.
What else can we help you with in your game? You got a couple of PGA guys who are pretty good at their jobs. You got anything else you want to know about?
What can we answer for you, Coach?
Well, getting off the backside, the longtime pro here, Scott Johnson, has worked with me for 24 years now. And, you know, he loves my golf swing, except I always end up with my right foot, my weight. I'm trying to get that shifted over.
Okay.
That's the hardest thing for me. Most of the guys I play with don't finish like this guy I'm talking to, Scott, Sean, with that high finish and the shoulders turn. But how do we keep going to get off that right side? That's my question.
John, you want to take this one or you want me to answer this one?
I can put my two cents in, so I'll go and I'll let you think about it for a second. But basically, my best drill with that question to people is to take practice swings, take your right hand off the golf club. Take your right hand off the golf club. Terry's getting up to do it because he wants to.
I like it.
Yeah, so you're not gonna ground it, Jerry. Take your right hand off the club right before impact. Yep. And then what you just play your left arm. There you go, dude. Right? He just did it. I wish I had the YouTube going right now. He just did it. We're downstairs underneath the patio.
We need to get the cameras rolling.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to get the cameras rolling.
Right hand off the club. Yeah. When you take, I wish I had the video. It's so people use their dominant hand, which is typically their right hand. We talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
But when you let go with that back arm and let the leading arm control the golf club, you get to a natural finish.
Correct.
He just did it. Yeah.
So what stops it? The right hand.
The right hand, a little bit of grip pressure. The right hand holds on right at impact, and you kind of think, yeah, instead of letting go, letting the left arm and the left side. Yep. Yeah, now he's got this perfect finish, T-Mac. Right foot's off the ground. I know. Well, that's part of it. You got to do it in practice form first, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my stat of the day or whatever, I feel like Dan Patrick, is four players finish with 96% of their weight on their left side or on their lead side, I want to call it.
Correct.
They finish with 4% of their weight on their back foot. Over here at Oakley Country Club on the first tee box today, we will see sometimes the opposite of that number, or more importantly, usually 50-50. They don't get their weight off the backside.
No. No.
I think you got to do it in practice swing, and then to Coach's point, you can hit golf balls, Coach, with your right hand. You just take the right thumb and right forefinger off the club, both hands on there, but now you got 8 fingers controlling it instead of, because it's that right thumb, right forefinger, T-Mac. We see it all day long in the lessons. I'm over the top, right?
Yep, correct.
You know, I play with my brother a lot, T-Mac, and, you know, we'll take videos of a driver. I really got off my right side. Then I go look at it when I was coming up the fairway. Oh, it's like 3/4 of the weight is still there. I'm up, but it's a false turn. I mean, my weight's still back there. Yeah.
Gotcha. A drill that I typically use with my students is I get them to grab the impact bag. Sean knows what an impact bag is. It's basically just a big bag stuffed with towels that we use for impacting the club. And I get them to hold that, and then I make them make a backswing, and then I have them throw it to me. And with that throwing motion, they typically get the feeling of that right side coming through impact. Another drill that I'll have them do is just go down to the pond and take some stones and skip some stones on the water and get that natural feel that we did as kids. I try to get back to that, what we used to do as younger people.
Yeah. I know the impact bags are, actually just pick it up and bring it back and throw it.
Yep. I just stand over to the left and let them throw it hard at me, and they get a little sense of enjoyment doing that, for sure.
One of the best drills in the gym is taking up that like 4-pound, 6-pound medicine ball, and basically doing what you're just talking about, T-Mac, getting your golf position, golf stance, and throw it against the wall and catch it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's a really good one. And it's explosion. That's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to explode off the ground.
Yeah.
And forget about posting and all these other terms that they're important, but the average bear, the average golfer needs to get off that backside. It's a great question.
Yeah.
To be able to, do you remember T-Mac when I was coaching the high school team? I think you were helping me in one of those years. Mm-hmm. We would stand in the ninth fairway. We have the kids throw the golf club towards the 150-yard marker.
Yes. Yeah. I love that drill.
Right? It's the same thing. I had somebody do it downstairs in track, man. They hit the wall behind them because they hold on with the club so far, the club goes back behind them to the left. You got to get the club to extend and the feeling of the club going out in front of you to the right, not left. And that right hand, that backhand just dominates so much.
It's full of iron all the way down the fairway.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you're aiming at a target, 150 marker, tree, whatever you want to do, you throw the club so it goes to the right hand side of the target, the marker.
Yep.
You can't hold on with your right hand. As soon as you do, club goes behind you. That's what it is. So again, it's all practice, but to have the golf ball in front of you and do all these things, it's the next level.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's the next level of doing it in competition and then playing for $5 and then playing in your senior championship.
Correct.
Like, these are just different.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
T-Mac, I was just thinking about golf and how I really get interested. I always played, but I was never really interested. And I'm at Bowling Green. I'm going to throw a name at you. You might remember. But A.J. Bonner was a club pro at the university course, coached that team, and he came out with a series of videos where hit a home run. If you've ever heard him at all, his videos, it was really big back, I'd say.
No, I haven't heard of him, but I mean, I think that's really what a lot of the pros are doing now, just, you know, hit it hard and go get it, really. I mean, smash and grab.
Yeah, it's interesting. You got to look him up. AJ Barnum. He had a had a series of videos that were. Once he moved to San Diego, we started like a San Diego Golf Academy, and he had this whole, you know, before video really became, you know, and there were, what do you call the old films, the DVRs,
DVDs,
yeah. But it's interesting to look up, and he actually marketed a golf club with like a little baseball bat in the bottom, so where you hit, you try to just hit a home run, so you flick your hands and. He threw it from his knees, he threw it sitting down. It'd be good for you guys to look at. I think you'd enjoy that.
I'm pulling him up on YouTube right now as we speak, my friend. I'm all into it already now. So
yeah, he's a great guy. Every Friday afternoon, he'd take the three coaches out and play. Because Bowling Green had a university golf course right there. So we'd play 18 with him. And he was just remarkably insightful and a great guy to listen to. So he got us all involved in it. Hit a home run, he said. Hit a home run.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. He played Muirfield, I figured he had, in Ohio.
Oh, how I need to know, how was that? How was Muirfield?
Well, John Hines was a big Jack Nicklaus. He kind of followed him around, but he became his general manager at Muirfield.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought us out. My brother, my son, and we stayed in the cabins there, right down on the, right near the clubhouse, and we played 18 with John. So the second day we come out to play, he says, "We're gonna get a little surprise here, Jerry. Jack's gonna come out, just walk a few holes in there." That's great. So
wow.
He gets out, and I forget that the par three over the water, with a sand trap in the back of it. I forget what number that is, but. So that's where he shows up. So I thought I was playing pretty well. Here's Jack. And talk about we grew up in the golf club. Yeah. I hit the ball about 10 yards. I was so tight, nervous on it. But that was a great golf course. John Hines, we had a big Wimette dinner here a number of years ago where we honored him and his wife, Ellen,
mm-hmm.
who was great friends of Jack and Barbara Nicklaus. And it was just that to me was a fabulous 2 days. And Muirfield was, I keep on looking back where the pros play, where I was playing from.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different golf course.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. Would you say it's better or on par with Augusta National?
I've never played Augusta National, but it's, I think it's,
you got there, bro?
No, I've never been there.
What?
But I tell you what,
Coach, we're going.
Come on, Coach. Road trip.
T-Mac, if you ever get to play Muirfield, there's a course like 5 miles away called the Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing golf course. It's the background, it's got the books there and everything. I was reading about it. A member of the Columbus Country Club got so frustrated with slow play and swimming pools and all that part. They just built his own golf course. He brought in, I think it was Jones, some really good architect. Yep. And he says, just spend as much money as you want. But you got to look that up, the Golf Club. It's simply called the Golf Club. It's in New Albany, Ohio. And it's close to Muirfield.
Wow. Yeah.
T-Mac, I told Coach we could probably do three of these today. He's got so much knowledge. It's been such a great honor and really just great time. I know he's, like I said, one of the most humble guys I know. I'm looking forward to the summer to get more texts at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m.
Perfect.
And hopefully if you come up here, we'll introduce you to him in person.
Yeah,
T-Mac, we need because Sean says he's going to send you down a Oakley golf shirt. So we just need your size and if he doesn't do it, please call me in a week and I'll get one to you.
Yes, sir, Mr. York. Thank you. Thank you. I'm a size medium, just so you know. So just send that out. But yeah, that would be great. Thanks, guys.
Are you a Johnny old guy? Are you a,
am I what?
Brady, Bill Draddy guy, Johnny old guy, Peter Millar. Who do you like?
Oh, who do I like for the senior championship?
No, for your golf shirts.
We got some fancier stuff than down at Lake Bernadette and Silverado, sir.
I'm not used to all that fancy stuff. So
we got Lululemon, we got Johnny O, we got Turtleson. Scott does a great job of keeping the pro shop stocked, and we'll find one good for you.
Yeah, something simple. I'm not a very big flashy guy, so.
There you go.
If Sean's lost your address, he's saying after we hang up.
I'll get it. Hey, T-Mac, really, again, Jerry, thank you so much for coming on board with us. Really appreciate it. Hope we got some drills for you.
I guess I like that.
Yeah. So
throwing that weighted medicine ball.
Yep.
There you go. That impact bag. Throw that impact bag a couple times. That medicine ball against the wall. You'll get that finish. You'll get that follow through. So, well,
John has one in his trunk. I've got to get it from him.
So, thank you, everybody. Mr. York, thank you so much for being on Dynamic Podcast.
Jerry,
thank you. Thank you. And it was great. Sean, thank you again. Last words, anything you got for us before we break, sir?
Always good. Next week, we got Scott Johnson, who is a two-time All-American at University of Tampa. He's also the head professional at Oakley Country Club for the last 24 years. He'll be a great interview just for a lot of different reasons, and look forward to having him. So just keep going, T-Mac.
Sounds great. Really excited. So thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you guys and listening to you guys next week.
Are you looking to elevate your golf game? With SwingTheoryGolf.com, you will. Tim, who is a certified PGA professional, offers expert instruction and personal attention to help you unleash your true potential. So get ready to tee off with Swing Theory Golf.